Lori Loughlin and her husband have decided to beg out of their legal woes. They pled guilty, and she will now spend 2 months in prison. Now, the prosecution was seeking over 40 years, so call me naive, but either there was some serious overcharging going on, or Aunt Becky knocked this one out of the park. On an unrelated note, Hallmark will now come out with a new special, Christmas in Alcatraz. Can Aunt Becky escape solitary to find true love in time for the holidays? Well, Mackenzie and I also will count down the three dumbest lawyers in America. Stay tuned, fellow bar members. You'll want to make sure you are not on this list. And finally, we review the legal accuracies of The Firm, all in this week's Debriefing of the Law. Well, this week I am calling an audible. I was supposed to cover the movie Just Mercy this week, but we will be doing that next week. Instead, this week we are going to be covering The Firm. Just wanted to give you that heads up in case you were expecting to hear our review of Just Mercy. You'll have to hold off another week, and we will cover that next week. I am really excited about this week's podcast, as Mackenzie and I will hand out the Darwinian Awards. These are the awards that go to the most outlandish, crazy lawyers out there, the ones that will soon be leaving our profession. You see, I taught this class recently called the Darwinian Awards for Lawyers, and I went over hundreds of cases of stories that you would just not believe. And so Mackenzie and I today will be covering the best of those stories. So without further ado, here is Mackenzie. Well, welcome to this week's episode of Debriefing the Law. I am your host, Joel Oster, here with Mackenzie Smith. Mackenzie, it's great to have you on again.
Great to be on.
You are joining us from the great state of Philadelphia, and I just did my workout today earlier and had to listen to my Rocky music. That is a staple in my household for my workouts. Whenever I need that extra oomph, right? The motivation, I just play Gonna Fly Now. And my rule is I cannot stop working out while Gonna Fly Now is playing. Do you guys care about Rocky like we do from outside of Philadelphia?
My personal story with Rocky is like I grew up, you know, in the Philadelphia
personal
area.
Story with Rocky? Oh, I got to hear this.
Not with Rocky himself, but I grew up in the area, but I never lived actually in the city. So I don't know if I just had a sheltered childhood or like what my deal is, but I actually never saw Rocky growing up. Maybe it's because my parents weren't from around here. So they didn't. I don't really know. But yeah, I had never seen it. And I watched it the weekend after taking the bar exam, actually. Okay. Like that weekend where you've been studying all summer, you're so burnt out, you're mentally drained from taking this test for 3 days. I took 2 states, so 3 days of testing.
I can hear the Rocky music playing now in the background.
Yeah. And I came home and I was like, you know what? I've never seen Rocky. So I watched all of the Rocky movies in a row,
really?
Like all weekend. And I loved it. Like I was like, how have I never seen this? Yeah, for sure.
Yes. I don't know how many there are now. I know we had Rocky 1 through 5, and then you had, I think, Rocky Balboa, and then a couple of Creed movies.
There's a Creed. I mean, one of my really good friends was an extra in Creed.
Really?
Yeah. We randomly took an acting class, like one of those adult night school things, like several years ago, just for fun. Like, I don't know. It was like once a week for 6 weeks or something. And like he got the acting bug and ends up showing up for like the open casting call to be an extra and got in the movie. And
wow.
It's like the final fight scene. It's hilarious.
I am so jealous. I'll be a stand-in there. Just let me go out there and meet him. Now, speaking of that, I saw this morning that Sylvester Stallone has put his $3 million mansion up for sale in California. And so I'm trying to do a collection here. Maybe I can have a GoFundMe page. Let me live out my dream. I would love to buy Sylvester Stallone's house.
Well, I mean, it sounds good to me. I don't know how anyone is buying $1 million or multi-$1 million homes like during the middle of this pandemic. I don't know if that's like a good time to be putting something like that on the market, but you know, it's not my area of expertise. So what do I know?
It's a business expense. We can do the podcast from there. And so I shouldn't say that out loud. I'm sure the IRS would frown upon that. But hey, a guy can dream, can he not? Well, let's cover some breaking news. And so I just learned that Aunt Becky, a.k.a. Lori Loughlin, and her husband, whatever his name is, I don't really care about him, they pled guilty in the college admissions scandal. And so, under terms of this agreement, Lori will spend 2 months in jail, pay a $150,000 fine, and agree that all future bribes to colleges will be done the normal way. Apparently, I guess that by paying the university directly to put their name on the side of a building. That's how you normally would bribe a college to get your kid in. And so all future bribes will be done that way. No, the last part I was just joking on. Well, what do you think about this plea? Are you, does it shock you? Are you happy with it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, in terms of the sentence that they're getting, I have no qualms with it. I mean, whatever. Like, it's fine. I don't, you know, they're going to hit like the cushy federal clink and not like the county clink. So it's not like, you know, I think the community service is a good thing. She has like a bunch of hours.
Okay.
And I think her husband has a bunch of hours. But like, I mean, in general, I just feel like, you know, A, exactly like you just mentioned, like, why would you not? I mean, it's so easy when you have a certain amount of money and power and influence,
right,
to get your,
right,
kids into whatever school you want to in the first place. Like, how dumb do you have to be to like, right, actually, right, commit federal offenses to do this, especially when your daughter is on YouTube saying, I literally never go to class and I only, yeah, want to go to college for the parties. Like, I don't get this with witnesses and people. Like, people put stuff in writing and video so,
right, right,
much, and then they get involved in like a lawsuit or they get arrested and they're like shocked that there's evidence. It's like, no, you literally created this evidence yourself.
The nightmare client who puts everything. Oh, wouldn't it be a nightmare to have Trump as your client?
Oh my God.
I just thought,
like, you're tweeting
all those
every
tweets.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, but people, yeah, do this all the time in real life. And it's like, why are you surprised now that, you know, I mean, and you're making the case for them. So don't act,
right,
shocked,
right,
that like you got caught. You didn't get caught. You actually like made the evidence.
You confessed.
Sealed, put it in the public domain, you know, whatever.
Oh.
But I also think like, you know, I have a lot more respect for Felicity Huffman, who copped to,
okay,
it right away. She apologized. She did her time. You don't hear anything about her. You don't see her, like, you know, in fashionable clothing, like on the paparazzi shoots or anything. She kind of stayed,
right,
low-key, did her time, and was really ashamed of it and, like, really came out and apologized and said, like, I never should have done this. I got, you know, caught up in something that I never should have, and I respect that. It seems like Aunt Becky at first was like, oh, well, I was only trying to do right by my kids and making sure they got,
right,
into the best school possible. It's like,
looking after her kids.
Yeah, but it's just like, it's so, like, typical of the corrosive moral relativism that's endemic
now,
in our society.
Now,
Becky,
hold on there, Mackenzie. Now, let me just ask you this. Do you really think that George W. Bush got into Yale because of his SATs? Do you really think that?
No, I don't.
Yeah. I guess apparently Daddy Bush bribed the correct way. So there's a right way to bribe and a wrong way to bribe. And apparently Aunt Becky just didn't do it, go through the proper channels to do her bribes. I don't know. Maybe I'm on an island all by myself. I just don't think that what she did was that bad, but maybe I am a really big Aunt Becky fan. I don't know. So
you have to recuse yourself from that one. Like, you might not be objective.
I might not be objective. Well, I also found out, and I'm not sure these stories are related, though maybe you found otherwise, but also in late breaking news, Michael Cohen has been released from prison. Is that to make room for Aunt Becky? I am not sure, but he was released from prison and is allowed to spend the duration of his prison term in his New York apartment. Now, no word yet if this should be viewed as a punishment or a reward. I don't know if he was like, did something wrong, so they're punishing him by sending him to his New York apartment. You got to understand, I'm from the Midwest, and so being cooped up in a New York apartment is not my idea of a good time. But apparently he was released because of the coronavirus. And according to the news report, Cohen, who is 53 and in great health, was deemed to be in a high-risk category. And so I'm assuming the court was sarcastic when it said that. But nonetheless, he is 53 and in great health and was released because of the coronavirus. Mackenzie, what do you make of this story?
I mean, you know, you've heard about this happening all over the country. Like, I do understand, like, you know, prison. Well, I guess prison isn't the place you want to be, like, generally speaking. But prison is definitely not the place you want to be in the middle of a global pandemic. Like, it's not, you know, isolated. It's not, like, the most hygienic place. So I wouldn't want to be there. But I also, like, haven't paid off hookers with campaign funds. So,
okay. So,
you know,
there's
I feel
that.
Like I have a leg to stand on there. You know, I don't think he's the first person I would be releasing. You know, I don't understand. But also,
it.
I do agree with you. New York apartments are terrible, terrible places in general, unless you're like insanely wealthy. So maybe it's not that much of a break for him.
So maybe this was punishment. I did read in the record where he was put in solitary confinement a few months ago because he got into an argument with another inmate over internet usage. And so, hey, maybe I can try that in my house with my boys arguing over internet usage. I can threaten solitary confinement. Or, hey, you can go to a New York apartment with Michael Cohen. I'm not sure what's the right punishment there. But it is interesting that Michael Cohen is 53 now. I'm not 53, but I'm a lot closer than what I ever want to give a credence to that age number. And he's in apparently good health. Why is that a high-risk category for coronavirus?
I don't know. You know, there are a lot of, I don't know if you've seen these, but there are a lot of online risk calculators, and you can put in, like, all of your demographic information and even information about, like, you know, what social distancing measures you're taking and how many people you see in a day, and it will actually calculate, like, your risk of getting COVID, and then if you get it, your risk of dying from it. And I don't know, like, there's got to be a lot of disclaimers on these things. But yeah, like, I did one for myself and my husband, and we both had like a 99.7% chance of surviving. So we feel like pretty
Sweet.
Good about it. But yeah, even my mom, who's in her mid-60s and has, you know, she has like mild asthma, but no like serious pre-existing conditions, she had like only a 2% chance of dying. I don't know why I'm laughing when I say that. It's not funny, like, at all. Like, this is, like, horrible, and I should go bury my head in the sand. But, yeah, we were like, oh, like, that's, you know, it asks you to guess what you think your risk is. And she said she thought her risk of dying was, like, 10%, and it was, like, below 2%. So, you know, we were kind of pleasantly surprised by that. So, I don't know. Like, I don't know.
Plan the party. Plan the neighborhood. Plan the neighborhood block party now. 2%. That's the ticket to go out and have a good time, apparently.
Right.
Well, I do want to transition to our Darwinian Awards. I recently did a class, a webinar, where I handed out Darwinian Awards. Now, I assume you are familiar with the concept of Darwinian Awards, but in case you are not, let me just help to unpack it here. See, Charles Darwin devised his theory, roughly called survival of the fittest, you know, natural selection. The idea is that over time, the strong will survive and the weak get eliminated. And apparently Darwin, well, I'm not sure he would be allowed to be in schools today, as I'm not sure this participation trophies concept we have today would fit too well with his theory. You know, the dodo bird can't reemerge because it tried really hard. But nonetheless, if this theory were applied to the legal profession, well, we have some awards to give out to those who will soon be departing. Yes, the weakest among us. Consider it your participation in trophies. Well, those lawyers, these are these lawyers who demonstrated by their utter lack of legal acumen and common sense that their days in the legal profession will soon be coming to an end. So, Mackenzie, I did this class where I handed out the Darwinian Awards. Now, it's somewhat of a recap of that class. Today, I want to talk about the top three. And so you and I have both come up with our own list of the top three award winners for the dumbest, I guess, lawyers out there. Now, before we go over these top three, listen, I can't wait to hear what your top three are. Do you have any personal, did anyone personally come to mind who might be a candidate for future Darwinian awards?
Well, yeah, I mean, actually, I called an audible on, so I read through the cases and two of them stood out to me as like beyond, like I actually laughed out loud while reading them. So I had those two, like, between the ones that were left, I couldn't pick like the one for the number three spot. However, I do have, I kind of called an audible and I'm going to add one to the list because it is a lawyer in my home jurisdiction litigated against in the past, not recently. So like, I guess I do kind of know him personally, but professionally. I personally like don't care for this person. So it's not like Schadenfreude. I mean, I guess it kind of is like a Schadenfreude, but he was recently disbarred within the last like, month or two. He was disbarred from being an attorney in Pennsylvania. He had been an attorney for over 40 years, so big deal. He was disbarred because he had engaged in a sexual relationship with a client for like an extended period of time. And I guess she ended up filing a lawsuit against him in which she said that he preyed on her. She was going through a divorce and he was representing her in the divorce.
Really?
And kind of preyed on her, entered into a relationship with her, and then loaned her money personally, like having to do with the divorce, I guess, to buy a new house or something like that. And then, you know, basically told her, like, you have to keep sleeping with me or else, like, I won't represent you anymore and I'll just send you a bill for all this money that I know you can't pay back. And so anyway, it went to the disciplinary board, obviously. She filed a complaint.
Obviously.
It went to the disciplinary board. And this guy's defense was like, no, it's okay because I really had feelings for her. And it's like, dude.
Wow.
Like, wow. Oh my God, how did you pass like the whatever it's called, the ethics bar? Like, I don't even know. And it just like struck me like this individual is very large person physically.
Okay.
And in a court, I guess we were negotiating once over, you know, something, and he didn't like the position I was taking. This is when I was a criminal prosecutor, and you know, I refused to withdraw some of the charges in this case, or I was probably doing something that was, you know, aggressive, but within the bounds of the law. And I'm talking to him, and I must have been like gesticulating with my hands, and he grabbed my hand and said, like, you know, you women talk too much or something like that. And I was like, oh no.
No, you know? He didn't say that. Women talk too much?
Yeah. And like, you know, do I talk a lot? Yes. Did I win that case? Yes, I did. So whatever. No, but yeah, so, like that's not a defense for that, dude. It's just so bad.
One of the more impressive things about the story is your use of the word gesticulating. And so I'll have to look that up. It was a very impressive word. Don't think I didn't catch that. But nonetheless, for you listeners out there, no, lawyers can have sex with their clients. That is not allowable under the rules. Romance, if you're going to have a romantic relationship, romance has to precede the legal relationship. It's a pretty easy rule to follow, but nonetheless, not allowed. And so what happened to that lawyer?
Yeah, so he got disbarred. He's completely disbarred now. And I don't know if they're, you know, if he can appeal it or anything like that. I have no idea, but it came out, I think, about a month ago. It was very recently.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, look, at the end of the day, like, I'm not going to celebrate a fellow lawyer being disbarred. Like, it's not, you know, whatever. But I just felt like, you know, maybe he had it coming.
That is a good candidate, I would think, for the Darwinian Award. I assume he can appeal it, though I don't know what your basis for appeal would be when you are sleeping with a client. And if I heard your story correctly, he also then tried to bill the client for said activity. And so I'm not sure that's actually a good thing. But nonetheless, My number three is a little bit different. My number three is the Florida Bar v. Ian Christensen. Do you remember this case?
I don't remember which one this was.
This was the guy
there
who
There were so
represented...
many Florida ones. I don't know.
I know. What is up with that?
I don't know. I carry a Florida bar card. I have an idea, but, you know.
No, what's your idea?
Well, I mean, it's Florida, you know, so it's like that. My only idea is like that's a stereotype of like people in Florida is that they're kind of nuts, right? Like there's that thing where if you Google your birthday and then Florida man, like some crazy news story, because there's a news story for every day of the year about some crazy thing.
I have not heard that.
Yeah,
I have not heard
that.
All right, maybe the sun has fried our brains. I am a Florida lawyer. I have my Florida bar card. I got to tell you, that is one tough bar exam because they want to keep the snowbirds out from practicing law. They just don't want people to go down there during the summer and be able to, or the winter, and practice law as a hobby. And so it is a very strenuous, tough bar exam that I had to take. But I will agree with you. A lot of my stories come from Florida. So this is the one where his client, he basically created this business that was an expert business on marijuana. And so you could call this business up and he would hand his clients out an official certificate. And so these are get out of jail free cards. He would give them to his clients and they're actually entitled official legal certifications. And that would give his clients permission to grow marijuana in their backyard. And so that's what they did. And so they grew marijuana in their backyard. And then it's not enough that he advised them to do an illegal activity, but he then gave them signs to put out in front of their homes announcing that they were growing marijuana in the backyard. And I don't know what is dumber, that he would give his clients a get out of jail free card, or that he would tell them to put up a sign in front of the house announcing criminal activity is going on inside the house. I mean, Mackenzie, you were a prosecutor. What would you do if someone put up a sign in the front yard announcing criminal activity? Do you think that might be probable cause?
Yeah, I think like your first step is you approve the search warrant, right?
Right. What is your probable cause?
I didn't get that. Like, was he really just like that stupid, or was it like a marketing thing? Like, why would you? And the other kicker was like, marijuana isn't legal in Florida.
It wasn't.
Like, it's not even like he was doing something that was like, could purportedly be perceived as legal. Like, it was just like straight. I mean, you might as well be like, you know, get your heroin here. Like,
right.
Not, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, it is an amazing story. He had just graduated from law school, apparently, and thought as a business model, he would specialize in these marijuana get-out-of-jail-free cards. And so apparently when law enforcement went to that house to, you know, look for evidence of criminal activity, when they were handed this get-out-of-jail-free card, they laughed. And I can just imagine that would be the response by law enforcement if someone handed them a get-out-of-jail-free card. But, hey, wouldn't that be nice, Mackenzie, if when we pass the bar exam and we're walking and we're shaking the hands of the chief judge as he's handing us, you know, our certificate that we are now members of the bar, if we each got our own 5 get-out-of-jail-free cards? I mean, wouldn't that be nice to actually have?
I mean, I would sell mine for so much money.
I know. Don't let your family know that you have it. All right. Well, that is my number three for bad lawyers. All right. What is your number two?
My number two is Dennis Duffy.
Duffy.
Yeah. I don't know. What was it? Oh, yeah. This is okay. This is out of Texas. And this actually just came out this month. And it
It's a recent case.
Yes. It's a recent case. This involves, it's not a disciplinary proceeding. It's actually a motion for sanctions that was filed by a plaintiff's attorney in this case for conduct that Mr. Duffy, Attorney Duffy, engaged in at a mediation. And I just, like, you have to read, I'm just going to read an excerpt from the judge's order. The judge actually denied the motion for sanctions. However, the order starts, like, and you have to, like, imagine in your head, like, a very... Well, this is what I imagined anyway, like a very reserved, conservative, like put together judge in his or her robe, like whatever. And the order starts. One of the sentences a judge does not imagine, much less welcome, writing, includes the words butt shaking in describing a lawyer's alleged actions at a mediation. Sadly, those words fit here. The allegation, I actually, because I'm such a nerd, I went onto the docket of this case and pulled the motion for sanctions because I wanted to know more details about what happened.
What did he do?
It's so bad I can't even say it on a it's really bad. Like, basically, it involves like very obscene language and it's really horrible. Basically, this
No, Mackenzie, you got to tell us. I have to know what he didn't know. You can use F-bombs or whatever to kind of maybe conceal the bad words. I got to know, what did he do?
Well, it was this is quoting from the motion for sanctions.
Okay.
So the plaintiff's attorney was a female attorney, and the motion was written by, I guess, the lead counsel on the case, and didn't mention the plaintiff's attorney by name. But I went to the website of the law firm and to see if I could see, and there's only one female attorney at this law firm. Very attractive woman, like definitely. That matters. Does not have anything to do with whether
you're
she's
painting
an attorney,
the picture. You're just painting the picture for us,
right? So she's there at the mediation representing the plaintiff. This guy Duffy, like I obviously like Googled him. Fun fact. He is no longer with his firm, Baker Hostetler, according to the website.
No longer, okay. Butt-shaking is cause for dismissal. That's for cause.
But on the bright side, last year, 2019, he was named Texas Employment Attorney of the Year. So
no
one can ever take that away from him. But yeah, so apparently he shows up at this mediation. I don't know if he was under the influence or what I have no idea. But he apparently was making obscene gestures towards this female plaintiff's attorney, shaking his butt and saying, "You have a ponytail, so I figured you want to fuck me. Don't you want to fuck me?"
Whoa.
How horrible is that?
What?
Yeah.
He said that during a mediation. Now, what did it?
In
I'm just curious.
In front of the mediator, like in front of multiple people.
Okay, now I'm just saying as a litigation strategy, I'm not following, right? That I'm not seeing how that will lead to a resolution of the matter. What precipitated this?
I don't know. And, you know, this turned into one of those things where, like, okay, at first I'm reading about it, the order's, like, hilarious. I LOL'd, and I'm like, oh, let me find out more. And then it, like, takes a dark turn where you're like, oh, no. Like, was he experiencing a psychotic break? Is he having substance abuse problems? Like, you know, this poor, you know, this whole situation is, I mean, obviously the female attorney, like, I feel aghast on her behalf and just absolutely horrified that this would happen to someone who's just trying to do their job and presumably in a professional way. And, you know, I have no idea, like, the underlying details and, you know, I'm not here to, like, draw unwarranted conclusions, but it definitely sounds like this is, like, something was going on here.
Now, I'm curious because I know where you're going because I know how the court rules. So tell me, What brought this on? Did anything bring it on? Because the court is going to make mention of something bringing this on.
Well, the court said that there was unprofessional behavior on both sides, right?
Right. So what possibly could there have been on the other side that the court said, and I don't want to give away the bottom line here, but there was no sanctions that were ordered. And so how what did the court say was, or what was there on the other side here?
No, I don't know. Do you know?
No.
Oh,
I just read the court's order.
Well, and in fairness, I do have to say, like, I didn't read the opposition brief because I ran out of time and I was just, like, too, like, horrified. But
right.
I don't know. Like, I really can't imagine, and, you know, maybe I'm not, like, totally objective here, but I can't imagine, like, in my opinion, what could you possibly do? I mean, there's nothing you could possibly do to deserve that or to warrant
unless,
that, so...
I'm just going to play devil's advocate here. Unless he wasn't actually talking sexual acts. He was just talking more of a, you want to mess with me kind of thing. Was it maybe in that context?
Well, I don't know. Is a ponytail like a
Oh, I don't get the ponytail reference. I don't get the ponytail reference at all.
I don't get it either. either. And then, like, why would that cause you to shake your butt? I don't get it. I just
so
don't
is this
get it.
Like a twerking kind of thing? Did he just like turn around and just I don't know.
I don't know. And like at this point, frankly, after like seeing his picture, I don't want to know. Like,
okay, all right.
I think it's better just left in the annals of, you know, disciplinary board history, I guess.
Wow. Well, that was an interesting number two. My number two, ironically, is very similar. This is disciplinary counsel v. Sarver, and this is out of Ohio. This was a case where a very similar to an earlier story you told, where the lawyer had a represented this person's boyfriend, and then started representing this person who's just her initials were JB. They didn't actually give her actual name, and then he started having an affair with this person on multiple occasions. Well, nonetheless, long story short, they decide to go to their neighbor, trespass on their neighbor's property, and use their hot tub without permission. So you got to keep in mind here, Mackenzie, what is going on? This guy is representing this lady, sleeping with her. It's a violation of the ethical rules. He then counsels her how to commit crimes by changing his GPS or her GPS on her phone so she can't be detected by law enforcement, thereby evading a warrant. He does all this stuff. He then runs for a county prosecutor's position, an elective office. He's doing all this kind of stuff. And what do they bust him for? Unauthorized use of a neighbor's hot tub. This is the only case I have ever come across in this nation where a lawyer was busted for the unauthorized use of a neighbor's hot tub. So that is my number two.
That's all right,
what is your number? Now I'm dying to know. What is your number one?
I'm so curious if my number one is the same as your number one.
It has to be. It almost
it's
has
like a,
to be.
It's a, like a drum roll moment. Like, I don't know.
Exactly.
Like, I feel like we're very different, too, though. So, okay. So, my number one is Inri Glenn Stevens.
Okay.
And he, I don't know what state this is out of, actually, but it's last year, and did whatever he did, and that's besides the point. The recommendation
right.
for his punishment was a 3-year suspension, and this guy decides that he doesn't want a 3-year suspension. He should actually be disbarred. So he emails the disciplinary counsel, and the email basically says, please don't kill trees or waste taxpayer money and personnel on me, or like I have no tolerance for the drivel you generate. You are dishonest lawyers and racists, and disbarment
wow.
would be an honor. And then it goes on to say, to date, aside from competing in the triathlon world championships, my greatest honors are my PhD from UCLA, which he probably got on a Crew scholarship, right? And my
right.
law degree from Berkeley, but disbarment will be framed and go right up alongside these diplomas. So, like, they respond and say, like, okay, we're going to issue an order to show cause why you shouldn't be
right,
disbarred.
Right.
And he then responds back by mailing them copies of a color image of Flava Flav with the text,
wow.
the disciplinary counsel is a joke, in all caps at the top of the page. And to me, I feel like Glenn Stevens is kind of like a disbarment hero. Like, if you're gonna like fail, just fail big and like
just
burn all
it.
The bridges on your way out, right? Like, he
right.
just did it with flair, and I appreciate that.
So you're suggesting, as a legal strategy, if you're trying to beat back this disciplinary proceeding, this wouldn't have been your course of action. You might have taken a different path in fighting these disciplinary attacks on your record.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he, like, already had something else lined up. Maybe he just didn't like being a lawyer in the first place. Like, I don't know, but he definitely chose to go out with a bang, and, you know, you
wow.
gotta respect it.
That almost tops the case here in Kansas, where a lawyer dressed up as Thomas Jefferson during his disbarment proceedings. Sometimes you're just begging for it. You're just saying, you know what? I really, really want to be disbarred. Well, I have a different number one. My number one is Jordan Margolis, aka the Excuse Man. Do you remember that case?
Yes.
This guy is a real life superhero. I kid you not, people. Go ahead and Google. Go to YouTube and Google Excuse Man, no spaces, all together, and you will see a lot of videos this guy produced where he became a superhero. He got a cape, had a tailor made, and he showed up all around public, basically exposing crappy excuses. But there's a problem with that. You see, he could have used his own superpowers for his case because he got involved in a Ponzi scheme where he got too involved in one class action lawsuit against Federal Signal Corp. He represented some firefighters who allegedly suffered hearing loss from these cab-mounted sirens. I mean, you think they're too loud. Apparently, the firefighters in these, you know, trucks really think it's too loud. And so they filed this class action lawsuit. Apparently, he spent too much money on that, got behind on his bills and his trust account, which is a big no-no. Lawyers, no, you cannot spend money out of your trust account for any other cause other than for your clients. Give the money to them. But nonetheless, he then started paying future clients with other clients' winnings. And so it was a Ponzi scheme. It all, like a house of cards, crashed in on him, and he was disbarred for that. But I just love the fact that he showed up as Excuse Man. And wouldn't you just love to have been in court and have the lawyer, the judge, ask him, "So, Jordan, I'm just curious, what is your excuse for this Ponzi scheme?" Boom. He could have like done a little twirling action or Wonder Twins activate or go into some kind of phone booth, come back as Excuse Man and given the answer and won the day. But that did not happen, and he was disbarred. So there you go. Those are our top three list of lawyers who are in need of or are very well receiving the Darwinian Awards. Hopefully, Mackenzie, we won't have too many future cases like this, but don't hold your breath.
There's some weird lawyers out there, man. Like, there really are. And, you know, it's like you work so hard. Like, I know there's some terrible lawyers and there are some lawyers who aren't that bright. But, like, in order to become a lawyer, you do have to, like, have a certain level. I mean, you have to pass law school, right? You have to pass the bar exam. Like, this is like when people like ask me about Kim Kardashian becoming a lawyer and they're like, aren't you offended that she's been? I said, no, I'm not offended. If she can pass the California bar exam, more power to her. Like, you gotta be fairly, you know, well-studied and intelligent to pass this thing. Like, who am I to judge who wants to become a lawyer? She wants to be a lawyer. Great. Like, good for her. And it's wonderful.
Right.
So, you know, you just wonder, like, these people at some point in their lives, they did work hard and they were smart. And like, what happened? What happened to these poor souls? I don't know.
Why? You go to 3 years of law school, not to mention the 4 years of undergrad. You studied for the bar exam. You passed it. And in that moment when you're thinking, I want to do the butt shake, could you not just be thinking, maybe I'm going to exercise a little bit of self-control here? I did, after all, spend 7+ years preparing for this bar exam. And so maybe I should just exercise a little bit of self-control. Let's transition now to our movie review. And this last week, we both watched the movie The Firm. And so it was one of my favorite movies. This is just a real feel-good, action-packed thriller, the kind of movies that I like to watch. I know. Did you ever notice this? Do you ever time out, Mackenzie, how long a particular scene lasts? You know what I'm talking about? Let's say a camera shot. So if a camera is focusing on a scene, so you got whatever. How long until that camera angle changes and another camera is used, another angle is used? Do you have any idea?
I have no. I mean, I imagine it would, like, the average would be pretty short, right? I don't know anything about filmmaking, though. Like, I'm such a dunce, so I have no idea.
I had no idea. So here's what I want you to do. Next time you watch a movie, if you think it's a thriller or a slow-moving, you know, type of show, count the seconds it takes until that camera angle changes. I did it for this last movie, less than 1 second per frame. That's it. 1 second, and then they're moving. That is why we have attention deficit disorder. We can't pay attention. They have to change the angle every single second. And so that's why apparently it takes so long to do these movies. But I like it when they do that. It just feels like the movie is going somewhere. And so I like the movie, The Firm. McKenzie, why don't you just unpack a little bit about what this movie was about?
So this is another movie adaptation of a John Grisham novel. And I think it came out like right before The Pelican Brief came out, right?
Same year, 1993. Yeah, same year. So John Grisham was at his height in popularity, writing all these briefs. Everyone, I think I even read he had 5 or 6 best-selling books at the same time during that year. So yeah, this is right at the height of his popularity.
And he's just like laughing all the way to the bank, right? So this one is Tom Cruise. So he had Julia Roberts before he got like really like movie adaptations drew some major star power. But basically, Tom Cruise is like a young lawyer, and he, I guess, goes to Harvard or something. Like they're always at Harvard
in Law these School.
Like, everyone goes to Harvard, and he gets a job at like a really prestigious firm in Memphis, of all places, and
which is
really
interesting.
Excited.
Isn't that interesting?
Like, I don't get that.
John Grisham really likes Memphis. And I learned that he actually is from a nearby area. I think he is on the Mississippi side there. You know, Memphis is right there close to the, I believe it's, I don't know, 30 to 40 or 50 miles from the border in Mississippi. He's on the Mississippi side, but that's why a lot of his movies are based in the Memphis area, which I got to admit I love. Because I love Memphis. They have the best donuts. I always have to give a shout out to Gibson Donuts and also to Gus's Fried Chicken. The best fried chicken you will eat anywhere in the world, right there in Memphis, Tennessee. But yeah, this is based in Memphis, so that excited me. I could taste that fried chicken as I'm watching this movie.
Yeah, so he goes to this law firm. And, you know, he and his wife, like, move to Memphis, they go to this law firm, and he quickly realizes that it is not, like, what he thought it was going to be. He feels like it's a little bit shady, and he learns that, essentially, the firm works for the mafia, like, engages in criminal conspiracies, and on top of that, like, way overbills everybody and engages in wire fraud and all of this kind of stuff. And not only that, but when their associates find out about the criminal behavior, they murder them. And so no one gets out alive. And then
that's the thing. No one leaves that law firm alive. Now, I want to talk about how real this movie is from a lawyer's perspective. That's why we are kind of reviewing these movies. We are two lawyers looking at lawyer movies, trying to analyze, okay, does this actually depict the legal profession in any real way? And so, first of all, let's focus on the recruitment process. As you mentioned, they really wooed this guy. They gave him, I believe, a free car. I believe it was a Mercedes that was in the parking lot there. They even maybe purchased the house for him, or at least gave him the loan for the house. All these really nice things that they gave him, plus a great salary. McKenzie, does that represent your recruitment at your first firm? What kind of car did you get?
I got no car. I got like a discount on my train pass, I think.
Exactly. I didn't even get a parking space. All right. I had to park in the street and walk.
I did get taxi service, though. We had a thing. So I graduated in 2009, which was like right in the middle of the recession. And it was right when, you know, a lot of the perks that were around kind of did start dissipating. So I kind of caught the tail end of, you know, the real cushy stuff. But I will say, when I first started at, like, the big firm where I went after law school, we did have a thing where I think if you worked until 8 o'clock at night or later, the firm would pay for you to take a cab home and would pay for you to order takeout dinner. So,
you
know,
past
it's not a
8.
House, but yeah. And I lived in the suburbs. So for me to be able to take a cab home instead of waiting, you know, an hour for the next train and it's late at night and it's kind of sketchy, like that was a big perk for me.
Okay. No, we both worked for large law firms for our first firm out, and the firm that I worked for, it was too expensive for me to even park in the garage. And so I'm just kind of a cheap guy. And so I just realized, you know what? I can park down the street on the side of the street if I get there early enough. So I would show up at the law firm like around 7:30 in the morning, park on the side of the street, and then walk a half a mile into the office. But hey, I wasn't going to pay for parking. So no free cars for me. What about, and the whole idea of paying your mortgage, that's just not real stuff, is it?
No, I mean, that would never happen. You know, I think you get, like, if you clerk first for a judge, you get, like, a bonus. And it's usually, like, a nice bonus. And that's fair. But, yeah, I mean, maybe they're buying the houses because of the murder. So maybe it's like they're trying to, like, you know, compensate. Like, well, we did murder some people, so, you know, we need to, like, do a little more for recruiting. I mean, don't you think, money. Like, wouldn't people know, like, if no associate ever left the firm alive, like, would that not be, like, a red flag, like, going in? Like, wouldn't people know?
You know what? That's the plot hole right there. Exactly. Hey, we don't need retirement benefits. Don't worry about that. You're not going to get there. Well, the main plot of this movie, as you pointed out, was the overbilling. That's whole movie kind of geared around the fact that Tom Cruise noted that his firm was artificially inflating the bills. Did you buy that part of the movie? Does that ring true to you in any way? I just can't see any firm that I've ever worked for that would go on to the actual bill where the lawyer wrote 5.0 hours, cross it out and put 6.2. I just don't see that it's ever really happened. Lawyers are smarter than that. If you're going to inflate the bill, you're going to inflate it from the beginning and not after the fact. I don't know. To me, that seemed weird.
Yeah, it's totally weird, especially because, you know, like, attorneys, associates, bonuses are based on how many hours they bill. So why would the firm, I mean, I understand it's to get more money from the clients, right? But, like, then you have to give more of a bonus to that lawyer who didn't earn it. And it just, like, doesn't, I mean, overbilling is definitely, unfortunately, a thing that sometimes happens, and attorneys get in a lot of trouble for that. And, you know, it shouldn't, it's one of those things where you're like, you know, the very rare few people who do it, like, kind of give a bad name to, you know, right. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, it is very, very rare, but unfortunately, like, it does occur. But yeah, it wouldn't occur. I've never heard of anything like that occurring at a systemic level where the firm is, like, literally forging bills and sending them out thusly
and
committing
write
fraud.
It. Yeah, they would not write it on top of the actual bill itself. I guess that's what I am saying. So, McKenzie, I'm just curious, from your perspective, because a lot of our, you know, listeners, they'd be very curious about how lawyers bill. Do you bill flat fees? Do you have flat fee arrangements, or do you bill by the hour?
No, we bill by the hour. So we're defense. Okay. We're on the defense side. So we do hourly billing. And, like, you know, it's, I think anyone who does it will probably tell you, like, it's the worst part of
private practice.
I hate it so much. It just, like, it's just absolutely the worst. I don't, like, there's nothing about it that I like. But, you know, you have to do it to get paid. And, like, it's, like, I feel like I'm more on the side of, like, I'm so over careful because, like, you don't want to overbill. So, like, I don't understand the people who would be tempted to, like, even do that, because it's a huge problem. Like, it's not, like, it's a really big deal. Like, if you're stealing, I mean, you're stealing, you know, like, you can't, I don't know. Like, it's just not, it's like shaking your butt at a mediation. Like, if you're at a point in your career where you feel like you have to do this, like, you need to introspect a little bit and, like, ask yourself, like, maybe this isn't the right path that I'm on. Right.
I guess. Like, and, you know, and I know all lawyers work at different paces, but I got to tell you, I just don't understand billing. I really don't. Maybe that's why I'm not a lawyer, practicing a lawyer anymore. I do more teaching of lawyers. But I did this license plate case. I represented this nonprofit organization in Missouri. They wanted a specialty license plate. They were denied it in Missouri. And so I filed a lawsuit against Missouri because their denial of my client's specialty license plate was viewpoint discrimination. All right. I had another friend who filed the exact same lawsuit in New York City. So we both had these identical lawsuits going forward at the same time. We both went through summary judgment, and then we went up on appeal where we both won our cases on appeals. So you got this, Mackenzie?
Yes.
You got what's going on here? All right.
Yes.
My legal bill. So we won the case, and if you win the case and it's a constitutional matter, you can have the other side pay your legal expenses. So I submitted my bill to Missouri. It was $70,000. Meanwhile, my friend who was litigating the exact same case in New York City submitted his bill for $350,000. And so apparently, I don't know how to turn a file. I guess that's what I'm saying. I don't know, but I got to find ways to bill more hours for what I am doing. Some of us, I guess, just, or maybe we're lazier. We just do things quicker. I don't know, but
it is like you do. I mean, you know, I was always a quick worker, like a fast test taker and all of that stuff. And then all of a sudden you get into this career and you're like, oh no, this doesn't even serve me. And like, I'm not going to like pretend to work slower. So yeah, it definitely like you, sometimes you feel like, well, wait a minute. I did as much work as the next person. It didn't take me as long, so I left and went to live my life and be with my family, and I'm not getting a bonus, and they are.
Right.
Wait a minute. What about that doesn't make sense? I mean, that's, to be honest with you, is like one of the reasons I left Big Law.
Yes.
Because, you know, the billing requirements were outrageous. I mean, you know, you couldn't have any semblance of like a life and
right.
meet the billing requirements, you know,
it
honestly.
Is vicious.
Yeah. And like, I just didn't want to live like that. So that's why I am. Well, a big part of the reason why I am where I am now. Yeah.
I've heard those horror stories, but there is such a phrase called churning the file. And what that means is, from a lawyer's perspective, you know, this is the cash cow of a case. You know, there's going to be a payout at the end of the day from either a client or from the other side if you win the case. And so you will litigate that thing to the nth degree just because you know the other side is going to have to pay the bill at the end of the day. So as long as you have arguably a valid basis for doing that research. And so, for example, here, Mackenzie, I wonder if this surprises you. The first case that I was involved with went to the U.S. Supreme Court. It was a legislative prayer case. I defended the town of Greece, New York, and they opened up their town's board meeting with a prayer. They were sued, claiming that prayer practice was unconstitutional. All right. We go through the discovery process. We go to court. Our side won it on summary judgment. It gets appealed to the Second Circuit, and the Second Circuit rules then against my client. And so we lost at the Second Circuit. So the other side, the plaintiffs, submitted to us their bill. Do you have any idea how much that bill was? Again, no trial, limited discovery, and through the Second Circuit. You want to just take a guess?
I don't even want to know.
$900,000.
No, I know. And that's why, like, sometimes, like, you know, like the people I work with and I, like, we're a very small, like, boutique firm, right? And we're fairly cheap. Like, we're not like expensive lawyers, and we're fairly efficient. And sometimes, like, we have these cases, and I mean, I guess this is a really like self-serving tangent that I'm about to go on, but I'm amazing and so are the people I work with, so whatever.
Right.
But like, sometimes we're like, oh my God, what are we doing wrong? Because we had a case a couple years ago, and you know, I'm the junior person in my firm, but you know, I'm 10 years out of law school, I have plenty of experience. So I was sent out to LA to argue this motion in federal court, and it was just me, you know, and I'm like,
right.
I'm $300 an hour. Like, I'm fairly, I mean, that doesn't sound cheap, but like, I'm fairly cheap as far as attorneys go. And on the other side of this argument were two partners from a very large, you know, top probably 20 law firm
okay.
in the country. One partner who billed four figures an hour, $1,000 an hour, and another partner who was probably like $500 or $600 an hour. So they're combined, you know, five times as much money
wow.
per hour than I'm charging my client. And like, I won. Like, it doesn't make you a better lawyer to charge. Like, it just doesn't. Like, it has, I don't want to say it has no relationship, because obviously if you've gotten a certain, to a certain point in your career, you can charge more. Like, you have more experience. You know more people. Like, clearly there's some rational basis. But a lot of times when it comes to individual motions or individual arguments or individual cases, like, it doesn't, like, it doesn't guarantee an outcome. Far from it. So the it's very odd.
Yeah. The bottom line is some lawyers definitely do churn the file. That is not ethical. It is a violation of Rule 1.5, just for the record. All right, well, let's cut to the chase here. McKenzie, The Firm, I thought it was an action-packed film. I like those kind of movies. I was very entertained by it. I would watch it again because I do enjoy it. I thought it had zero relevance to the legal profession. And so I am going to object to this movie being admitted into the Hall of Fame for greatest lawyer movies of all time. What is your take?
Yeah, so after watching this and The Pelican Brief a couple weeks ago, I realized that, like, maybe John Grisham is more writing novels that just are like action novels that happen to be involve, like, lawyers who are the characters in the novels. Like, they're not really about the law at all. But I, you know, so I agree with you. I would object. But I will say, you know, it did kind of reactivate my PTSD of working in a big law firm, especially the scene where the FBI agent says, like, no one has ever left this firm alive. Like, at first I laughed because it's just so ridiculous. Like, people are not murdering their own lawyers, first of all.
Right.
But also, then I, like, had a moment where I was like, oh, maybe this is, like, metaphorical, and he's talking about, like, spiritually, and I do feel like if you spend a certain amount of time in big law, like, your soul kind of dies, so do relate to that. And then the scene where Tom Cruise literally, like, is trying to escape the law firm and literally throws a chair through the window and then jumps out of it. And I just thought that was a mood. Like, I've had so many work days where I'm just like, I'm out of here. And I would have loved to throw a chair through the window and jump out into a conveniently parked, cushy, padded truck below, you know, that like happened to be there. So I, you know, it did, like, metaphorically kind of remind me of my days when I was there.
McKenzie, I spoke too soon. I did not look at this movie through the prism of it being an allegory, but you are right. This is all about you will be spiritually dead if you give your entire life to The Firm and so have a life. Now, that actually is a real story. You hit on a real good point. I do think that does happen. Lawyers do sell their souls out, give up their actually having a life, and there is a huge price to be paid. They'll be thrust themselves outside of their windows. That is a great take and a great way to finish. And so do you have an idea for our next movie to watch? I do know this pandemic is coming to an end. At least the lockdown is coming to an end. But nonetheless, I still like watching good movies. I'm always on the lookout for good. I've seen a lot of good TV shows on recently. There's this one this last week called Defending Jacob. Fascinating story. I'm starting to watch that as well. But what is the next movie you want to see?
I mean, I feel like we should watch something funny. We're like, we should circle back to a comedy. So, you know, we've kind of done the 90s thing. So I'm trying to think, like, I mean, Legally Blonde is one of my favorites of all time. But if there's something like of that genre or of, you know, similar to that, I'm kind of drawing a blank on, like, I mean, what could possibly be similar to Legally Blonde? It's
all
so
right.
Amazing.
Let's do Legally Blonde. I have not seen Legally Blonde recently. And so I actually have been wanting to watch that for my class. And so let's do it. Legally Blonde.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you so much for being on here, McKenzie, and we will talk to you next time.
Sounds good. Talk to you soon.
Well, thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. We need your love to help us continue highlighting the funnier side of the law. I want to give a special shout out to our Vice President of Operations, Wendy Oster, without whom this entire operation would be a mess, our marketing team, Red Bird Solutions, and Leanne Holmberg for spreading the good word about us, Sean Wynn and 15.5 Features for making me sound way better than I actually do, and Ryan Kuhn and Paul Kuhn of Triplicity Marketing for our technical and computer support.